KPTZ now joins the Board of County Commissioners weekly meeting in progress for this week's public health updates held as a virtual meeting during the COVID pandemic. Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Tom Locke and Department of Emergency Management Director Willie Bentz will now brief our commissioners and you, our KPTZ listeners.
Thank you. I will check.
See them both there.
Set me up. And I heard AV capture has gone down, so it's also another note.
Carolyn, is Willie? Oh, I guess I can look in the participant list, huh?
I made him a.
Is there?
Oh, I
tried. There we go. Thank you, everyone. We're getting the new technology worked out. Welcome to KPTZ. Glad to have your partnership in airing our weekly report, and glad to have Dr. Locke and Willie Bentz here to tell us what's going on in the world of COVID. So, Dr. Locke.
Well, good morning, and welcome to Zoom. This tends to be my main platform, so I'm most familiar with it of all the different tools out there. To start out with, the national picture is not so good. After this long decline in cases, we saw in the last several weeks this plateaued, and now we're on the upswing again nationally. COVID cases went up by 15% over the last 2 weeks. So we're now at around 63,000 new cases a week, and that's just the confirmed cases. The true number is probably higher than that. Fortunately, death rates and hospitalizations are still on a downward trend, but we're nationally, we're now at 550,000 confirmed deaths, and the projection is that we will certainly exceed 650,000 before this is all over, which is greater than the death toll for the 1918 pandemic, which we thought up to that point was the worst in history. We're seeing COVID rates go up in 22 states. 22 states have greater than 10% increase in their cases, and Washington State is one of those. So Washington State has had a 29% increase in cases over the last 2 weeks. Hospitalization is up by 12%. And the on Friday, the King County health officer said, told us it's even worse in King County. So they saw an increase in cases of almost 43%. In the last week, they saw COVID hospitalizations go up by 25%. And it's different this time. Now what they're seeing is people in their 40s and 50s are being hospitalized, and virtually no one over the age of 75, which is actually good news in the sense that we've been very successful at vaccinating this population, and the vaccine is working. As we expected, to prevent serious illness and hospitalization and mortality in these high-risk elderly populations. But we're still seeing the real increases are in a much younger population, in the 20 to 39 year-old age groups. And we think this is what the fourth wave is going to look like, is younger populations. And to the extent that the fourth wave is dominated by these what are now being called variants of concern, and especially the UK variant, more people will get infected because the virus is now more contagious, and it can cause more severe disease in younger people. So that's Very few people are now talking about if we get a fourth wave. We are starting to see the beginnings of the fourth wave, and as with all waves, the real test is how much can we flatten this, how much can we suppress it and limit the severe disease, hospitalization, and mortality. Also, very much a trend. We're seeing this in children, in younger populations, which fortunately have much less severe disease, but it has impacts for schools. So it to the extent that we have more contagious forms of the virus spreading, that's going to challenge us even more in keeping schools open. And we're not backing off on our plans to keep schools open. It's just that we have to redouble our efforts to keep them safe. We do have most teachers vaccinated now, which is a certainly a step forward. And whereas we're seeing the UK variant move fairly quickly in the US, the projections are now about half the COVID cases in the US will be the UK variant by the early part of April. It's moving slower than that in Washington State. We have the third highest level of sequencing, that is to say surveillance for these variants in the country, because we have a lot of biotech labs. And we're only seeing about 10% or less of the coronavirus in Washington State is in these variant categories. And even less of it is the UK variant. But we think it's gonna come. Here in Jefferson County, our case rates have actually gone down a bit. So in fact, unless we get any late reports from Saturday, we've had no cases in the last week. And we had 7 cases in the week before that. And so that drops our case rate per 100,000 for 2 weeks to 22. It was 25 before that. We're seeing about 2% of the tests done are coming back positive. Clallam County is very similar at 34 cases per 100,000, 2.2%. positivity. So these two counties, along with San Juan County, we're among the lowest in the state right now, which is somewhere we've consistently been for some time. Kitsap County has gone up slightly. They're at 80 cases per 100,000 and 4.1% positivity. And Washington State currently is about at 125 cases per 100,000 and 3.3% positivity. And the real hot spots now in Washington State, Pierce County is close to 200, Yakima, Kittitas County, so some eastern Washington counties, Whitman County, where WSU is I believe 400 cases per 100,000. We're especially seeing these cases in urban counties and places with universities. Vaccination rates continue as fast as we can get vaccines. So we've administered over 3 million doses now in Washington State, and statewide, about a quarter of the population has had at least one dose, and about 15% are fully vaccinated. In Jefferson County, we officially became the highest county on both of those metrics last week. And I got a call from the Seattle Times. I don't know if that ever turned into an article or not. I didn't have time to check, but we've given over 20,000 doses of vaccine in Jefferson County. 45.19% have had at least one dose. 28.72% are fully vaccinated, and those numbers are about a week old. So we've been able to, you know, give about 1,000 more doses since those statistics were compiled. The county that's closest to Jefferson County in these numbers is neighboring Clallam County. So we are kind of the number one and number two counties in terms of sort of aggressively vaccinating our populations. Although that process is going to slow down a bit because our allocations have been reduced. We were sort of averaging about 1,800 to 2,000 doses a week that we were getting into the county, and now that's been dropped to about 800 a week. We think this will be fairly temporary. We'll continue for another couple weeks as the state reallocates vaccine to areas which are playing catch up, and you know, we're fine with that, of course. We see this as something that we're all in together, but we want to maintain this capacity in the county to administer vaccine as fast as we can get it, because everyone's projecting a significant surge in sort of the middle to late part of April, and then a really dramatic increase in the month of May, and we would like to get virtually everyone who wants to get vaccinated in Jefferson County, get them at least started on their vaccine in April and May. That's really what our goal is. And along those lines, we had our second mass vaccination clinic in Chimicum High School, and Willie can certainly add to this, but I think everyone agreed it was once again very successful. We got a lot of the kinks ironed out, so the things move very smoothly throughout the day, and I think we're all feeling confident that we'll be able to meet our target of 600 vaccinations a day once the supply is able to support that. So we'll be doing 300 new doses each clinic, and then 300 second doses is the plan. This week we gave 309 doses, really limited by the supply. That's all the vaccine that we were able to get. We'll continue to be working with the Jefferson Healthcare and their drive-through clinic. I just met with them this morning before this meeting, and we want the pharmacies to really be active partners in this as well. So between those three groups, public hospital district, pharmacies, and then the volunteer-based clinic at the Chimicum High School can provide, we think we can keep up with the vaccine supply. We'll have many challenges on the way. There's been quite a bit of federal funding for this. It's been appropriated both in December and then through the Rescue Act, but we're really not seeing that yet at the delivery level. So hospitals and pharmacies and others have been pretty much putting up the resources to sustain these vaccination levels on their own so far. And we are we are pushing very hard to get this money flowing to support this, because we haven't even reached the hardest part of the administration challenge yet. We have folks from local health meeting with Department of Health today, and we need to get the support there to sustain these efforts. It's not reasonable to expect hospitals and pharmacies to be losing, you know, thousands and thousands, actually tens of thousands of dollars trying to support these efforts. And then the other big vaccine news is that the priority groups will be opening up. The final two priority groups, which are known as B3 and B4, they will open up officially on Wednesday of this week. And so B3 is primarily people with medical conditions. So people with diabetes and lung disease and kidney disease and people who are on cancer chemotherapy or other immune suppressing medications. There's a list of about 25 different conditions that qualify you. And we just urge people to look at it is if you have a chronic medical problem, you are probably on that list. And so you will become eligible. Anyone 16 years of age or older who have two or more of these conditions is now eligible. Anyone over 60 years of age becomes eligible. And then a large group that involves the staff and the residents of homeless shelters and jails, any kind of group homes or group living settings that have not been on the list up till now are on it. And then restaurant workers, people working in manufacturing, people working in construction. So this is a big group. There's about 3 million people that are eligible for this vaccine right now in Washington State. And as of Wednesday, 2 million more people will be added to the list. And something the health officers met on Friday, and something we are shooting for as a goal is to get rid of these lists altogether by the middle of the month, that we would like to move beyond prioritization. It's getting incredibly confusing for people, and it's really it's making it harder for us to vaccinate people because no one's sure whether they're eligible or not. And so we think this process has kind of outlived its purpose, and we are really pushing for ending all of these restrictions on vaccinations by the middle of April. And by federal mandate, it has to end by the beginning of May. So hopefully we've only got a few more weeks of these confusing and very detailed restrictions, and then it'll be wide open for people, because that's what we've been waiting for, is that we could just schedule appointments for anyone who wants to get vaccinated, and we can really promote the benefits of the vaccination and the importance of it. So it's not just about individual benefit; it's about the kind of combined effect of all of us getting vaccinated, and therefore making it harder and harder for the virus to spread in the community, and ultimately bringing the pandemic to an end. Yes, so that kind of covers the main points I'd like to make. And before I move on to our KPTZ questions, maybe I could ask if there are any questions from the commissioners.
Greg?
Yep. Thank you, Dr. Locke. And I have to confess that my family's risk analysis has really changed with the vaccine moving forward. And just a couple questions about that. One, can you, I guess, dive a little bit deeper into this disturbing trend of increasing cases, at the same time that, my personal family, my parents are fully vaccinated, my brother's halfway vaccinated. So we have been having food inside with this group without masks. And, it feels safe at that point. And it's definitely influencing decisions that we're making. And I'm wondering if you can dive into kind of what best practices are in this nebulous phase where we really understand how effective the community mitigations can be, but it's a real moving landscape as to make sure that we keep our loved ones safe and ourselves as well.
Right. Well, things do really open up for those who are fully vaccinated, and I would urge people to be confident in following the CDC guidance on this, and in that guidance is really pretty conservative, and people could be doing even more than that. And and what you mentioned, that these kind of family gatherings are really, I think, the highest priority, because that's, you know, it's a group you kind of, you know, their vaccination status, you know, their risk status, you know, if they've traveled recently to high risk areas, you know, how serious or not serious they might be on keeping themselves safe. So, and overall, or another factor too, is we are in a lull in the storm in Jefferson County right now. We are at one of our lowest points in the pandemic in terms of transmission. So this is a relatively safe time to be out and reconnecting with family and close friends, especially fully vaccinated friends. But we have to watch out we have to really pay attention to what's going on around us, because the storm's not over. We're just in a lull, and there's a number of unknowns about what's coming next. We have some disturbing reason to believe that what's coming next is more contagious, and therefore might be harder to control. But we have the very powerful tools of the vaccine. You know, and it's, I you know, many people say, that we're in a race between the vaccine and the variants, and it sounds melodramatic, but it's completely accurate. That is exactly what we're doing. If we can roll out the vaccine fast enough and to the right people, we will win the race, you know, especially in rural Washington, and we will have we'll be successful in flattening this curve. And if we don't, if we stumble along the way, or if vaccine hesitancy becomes more of an issue than we're expecting it to, and a substantial number of people decide they don't need the vaccine, then this is going to last longer than it might otherwise have to. So, you know, I wish I could tell people, you know, the danger's past and it's time to, you know, get out and enjoy the spring. But the truth is, we still have to be very careful, and masking is the most important thing. You know, if we made any mistake in the pandemic, it was to underestimate the value of source control. That since most COVID is spread by people without symptoms, if those people have a mask on, it dramatically reduces the amount of virus they spread by a factor of 90% or greater. And so that keeping up the masking in public places is really important. Distancing and ventilation become very important too. And getting vaccinated, because that really kind of opens up the world to you. At the point that you're vaccinated, your risk of serious disease dramatically decreases. And then your main consideration once you're vaccinated is, are you a risk to someone else? You know, might you be carrying the virus and not knowing it? And so you have to be careful if you're around unvaccinated people who have risk of complications. But that group has been the priority for vaccination. So it's getting smaller and smaller all the time. And things, you know, after we get through this big push in May, things really will open up. That's why I really urge people to kind of keep their guard up for the next 2 months, and then we should be in a much better place.
That's good to hear. I've got two more questions, if I may. One slightly tongue-in-cheek, I'll let you guess which one. The second question I have is about, you know, you talked about us being maybe open to all vaccinations in the middle of April, but it doesn't sound like we're going to be anywhere near halfway done with our vaccinations. I guess, how does that jibe with, you know, getting the vaccine to the right people? I guess I can't quite resolve that in my brain. If we've still got more than half the people vaccinated, shouldn't we still have priorities?
Yeah, that's a great question. And what we're kind of finding, the priorities are not really working to get the vaccine to the right people. What we're finding more and more, there still is disparity in access to the vaccine. But what we're finding is the way to correct disparity is not through these very complicated hair splitting priorities. I mean, there are 11 pages of priorities that even we can't understand. And we're specialized in this area, and it's very confusing to the public. So the way we're finding to correct disparities is we have to identify populations that are not being served, and we have to bring the vaccine to them. We have to target them for the vaccine. We have to identify access barriers and lower those. And increasingly we're doing that. You know, we're figuring out how to do it. So what our message to the governor this last week was, and to those that have been doing these priorities, is complex prioritization is not the way to correct disparity. Is outreach and local flexibility are really how we're going to address that problem, and that's what we're advocating.
Dr. Locke, this is Carolyn. I'm sorry, Dr. Locke. There's a lot of static, and I think it's coming from your line is very loud at times. I don't know if it's you shuffling the microphone, maybe, but I want to say it's from your line. I apologize if it's not, but it seems like it's coming from your microphone. Can everyone else hear it? It's a really loud intermittent static. So I'm not sure if it's from you moving around or not.
Okay, I'll be careful about movement, but I don't see that anything's changed here. But I'll.
Okay. I'm not 100% sure it's you, but I think it is.
Great. Thank you. That really explains it, Dr. Locke. And my last question is, I just want to make sure, I haven't heard about it at all, but has there been any backlash against people of British descent with the variant spread?
I haven't heard that. It did originate in Britain, certainly, but you know, we have plenty of homegrown variants of concern in the U.S. too. There's a New York one that's making the rounds. There's a California strain. So it's just a coincidence, really, where it arises. But the UK variant is predominating because it's so much more contagious, and that's evolution. You know, the more the better you are as a virus that's spreading person to person, the more predominant you become.
Great, thanks.
Heidi?
Two quick things. First of all, Dr. Locke, thank you for weathering my questions over the last couple of months about the crystal ball and events. As I think most of the community at this point knows, the Maritime Center has decided to move forward with a wooden boat festival tentatively and with lots of precautions in place, but that was a big decision for them, and we were helping them make that decision, and they appreciated your letter. And the second question I think is for Willie. I've about the mass vaccination clinic. I've heard that there might have, somebody told me you should get over there right now, there's extra doses. I just kind of want to know, is there a waiting list? How do you as a citizen who's maybe not in a current bracket, but you're ready to fly if you need to, how do you respond to the opportunity to make sure that vaccination isn't wasted? Have we wasted any vaccine?
No, unfortunately, we haven't wasted any vaccine. Both of these clinics, we've been allocated 300 doses. And then, of course, we have people who have made appointments who end up being no-shows, so we have to fill those spots. And then the previous event, we were able to tease out 30 extra doses, one from each 10-dose vial. But this event, we had a different type of needle, which made it a little bit harder to tease out those extra doses. So we were only able to grab 9 extras for that 309 total Dr. Locke mentioned earlier. As far as a waiting list goes, we've been primarily targeting those folks who've been volunteering with us. to help them fill out the waiting list, to get them protected since they've been serving at these events. And we've been looking at, you know, other kind of partner organizations and doing outreach through some of our networks to develop that waiting list and make sure that no doses go unused. If and when we do develop kind of a publicly available waiting list, I'll certainly make that announcement here and put that up online. But for the time being, we're reaching out through those networks to make sure that we're not wasting any vaccines. So again, fortunately, we haven't had that issue yet, but there will come a time when we'll have a bigger public waiting list, and I'll be sure to let everyone know.
Some of my friends were at the corner store in Chemeca, more thrilled to get the call, not last weekend, but the weekend before. So thank you for that. They're on the front lines.
Exactly. And that's, we've been kind of targeting those folks who we know who need to be protected. So that's why we're again targeted right now, but there will come a time when it's, you know, anyone and everyone who wants to, who is willing and able to wait and be there on a moment's notice for extra. So that time will definitely be coming.
I do want to hand it off to you in a minute, Willie, but just one quick question. Do we anticipate, I think it's on Fridays that this is being announced, do we anticipate that certain counties in the state will move back to phase two, given the high numbers?
I've not seen any information on that. And the thresholds are really pretty high, you know, 200 cases per 100,000. But there are counties that are at or above that. So, that's what the way it's the roadmap process is supposed to work. And we think that some of these increases are actually, it's not the changes that occurred a week ago. It's more 4 to 6 weeks ago when some of the I-5 counties opened up restaurants and other large events. It takes about 4 to 6 weeks between when you do something and when it has an effect of increasing transmission. Well, I had a few KPDZ questions, if I can quickly go through those. One question asks, why are the numbers different on, if you look at Jefferson Healthcare's vaccination site and you look at the state site, there's actually a very good reason. It's that Jefferson Healthcare is reporting on what they're providing, which is about 80% of the vaccines in the county. And then the state site that it counts what the pharmacies have received as well, which is another 20%. And then there's also a state reporting site that looks at residents of the county, and that looks at zip codes. So that would count someone who received the vaccine out of county, say they worked out of county or they were able to get an appointment out of county. So all of those different sites are actually counting different things. And we think our vaccination information in the state is really very accurate because everybody who gives a shot has to report it within 24 hours to a state registry. There was a question about, 3 feet versus 6 feet and how important is it really, and that people don't tend to follow the 6 feet that much. And it remains important. There's nothing magical about it. The World Health Organization uses 3 feet. United States is somewhat more conservative. And originally it came from standards based on droplet transmission. When we cough or sneeze, large droplets come out of our airways, and those usually settle within 3 feet. But the real thing we're concerned about with COVID is aerosols and things that float in the air. And even 6 feet is not completely protective against that if you're indoors. It really depends on masking and ventilation even more than distancing. But keeping your distance remains important. There was a question, if I get my vaccine at a pharmacy, will there be a bill or a copay? And the answer is absolutely not. Pharmacies, providers, they are allowed to bill a kind of a small administration fee to insurance or Medicaid or Medicare, but there's no copay, and the vaccine is provided by the federal government. It's certainly not free to us as taxpayers. It's been a very expensive vaccine, actually, but it's free to those who are receiving it. There was a question that asked, noted that husband and wife had gotten their second dose, and they had no reaction other than soreness in the injection site. And does that mean the vaccine was not working? And fortunately, the answer to that is no. That, you know, most people get a little more reaction than that. Around 60 to 80% of people get some generalized reaction, tiredness or headache from the second dose. But if you don't get that, it's the chances are still excellent that you're getting a good immune response and you're protected against severe disease. I wouldn't worry about that. And then there was a question, kind of what we were just talking about, and that is, someone who went to the website and was 60 years old and was able to register, and are they taking a spot away from someone else? And I'd reassure people that, if you can get an appointment, if you honestly answer the questions and it says you're eligible, just go with it. our overriding goal is to get as many people vaccinated as we can. And as I was saying earlier, some of these restrictions have been an impediment to that. And ironically, we've been having trouble filling appointments at the hospital, at the pharmacies. And the reason is the restrictions are so confusing and people have been holding back and saying, maybe it's not my turn yet. So we're really going to push these next two groups, B3 and B4, for the next 2 weeks. And then, even though the vaccine supply will not be enough to provide everyone an appointment, exactly when they want it, that's probably not going to come till sometime in May, where scarcity will turn into surplus. But we still want to get past the prioritization because it really complicates what we're trying to do in terms of administering this. When you're trying to give 600 shots a day, you just do not have time to individually verify eligibility of each person. We really need to focus on safety issues. Do people have allergic reactions? Do they faint when they get vaccines? That's our focus at the vaccine clinic level. We think we'll do a better job once we get past all the restrictions, and it's coming sooner rather than later. I think we're in the last 2 weeks of restrictions, and we're hoping for a fairly dramatic increase in supply by the middle of April and beyond.
So yeah. That it from KPTZ?
Yeah.
Okay. I wonder, Dr. Locke, could you just give a quick reminder for folks who are making their spring break plans for next week?
Yeah, my recommendation and the CDC's recommendation is to not travel. But if you do travel, stay as close to home or pay attention to where you're going. The West Coast actually is the case rates are down all around the West Coast. Most of the areas in the Southwest, Arizona, New Mexico, but the hotspots now, Florida, the East Coast, Michigan is probably one of the worst places in the country. And that's going to change week by week and get worse. So it's, there's if, especially if you're not fully vaccinated and you do end up traveling out of state, when you come back, you should follow the state and the CDC guidance, and that is isolate for a week, get tested 3 to 5 days after you return. Obviously, if you test positive, that will determine what you do next. But if you don't get tested, the recommendation is you stay in quarantine for 10 days after your return. And the reason is, you know, if a lot of people travel over spring break, it's going to make things worse in Washington state. They will import virus from areas of the country that are having a lot more outbreak activity than we are.
Can I follow up on that question? I'm just curious, at the Jefferson Healthcare and other testing facilities around, is there still as many obstacles to getting a test if you do travel and come back? Can you make an appointment with Jefferson Healthcare to make a to get a test?
I think the biggest obstacle is if you want to get a want to follow the CDC's advice and get a test before you go, and the reason is insurance companies don't want to pay for that. But coming back, that you can get scheduled because we're regarding that as being the same as if you've been exposed. So it's important to tell people you've been traveling, you think you may have been exposed, and that's the reason you're getting tested. You're not getting tested out of idle curiosity. You're getting tested because you may be at increased risk.
Commissioner or Chair Dean, this is Carolyn here. There is a lengthy question in the chat box for Dr. Tom Locke. And while this meeting already seems to be behind schedule, opening the floor to allow for public comments, I wouldn't advise it, but I'll let that be your decision.
Yeah, I think we haven't even gotten to Willie yet. So I think we will, it's a good reminder, we'll need to clarify in future weeks how we want to utilize that chat box on the new platform. So sorry for this week, let's hold off on that and we'll figure that out in coming weeks.
Thank you.
Okay, Willie, should we hand it off to you to hear about how the clinic went Saturday and how are things at Department of Emergency Management?
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. And as Dr. Locke noted, Saturday's clinic, 309 doses delivered, not quite that 330 that we hit the previous week, but we're still very content with the way things went. We'll have a little bit of pause in those mass community vaccination clinics due to the vaccine allocation in the county, but we're ready and raring to go to open those back up once vaccine supply does open. Specifically on the 17th, when we will have second doses for those individuals who attended our first clinic. Right now, we are supporting a couple of different operations with volunteers through our department. We have our mass community clinics ran by us at DEM and with our partners in public health. We're supporting the Jefferson Healthcare vaccination site. We're also running our call center here at DEM. And we're starting to support the Tri-Area Pharmacy vaccine clinics. The Bainbridge Island Medical Reserve Corps has been tirelessly working to support them for the past 3 months. So we're looking to give them a little bit of a break and supplement their operation with our local volunteers. So as always, we're still recruiting volunteers. Again, we're supporting four different operations, but we are a little bit backlogged right now. So I do appreciate everyone who's reached out to us. I appreciate their patience as we work to get through all the paperwork and all the necessary things to get these volunteers up and running. I do want to communicate that, we'll have folks reaching out to us on, Thursday and Friday before the clinic, hoping to help out. And I appreciate their willingness to help out on short notice, but especially for those folks on the medical side, we do have quite a bit of administrative and, bureaucratic hurdles to jump through to get you up and running. For those on the medical side, we do require a background check. We have to verify your credentials. You do need to register in the WASERV volunteer portal. And never mind, we also have to get you trained up no matter what the position is. So there is a little bit of work to be done beforehand. So we appreciate folks' flexibility, but the more advanced notice we can get, Again, by the time you reach out to us and we get you trained up, it may be a couple of weeks before you're ready and able to actually jump right in and volunteer. So we're still recruiting. Just again, we can't put you to work immediately. And we were able to, again, staff all these clinics in the meantime, but our volunteers have been working, you know, tirelessly to help get this up and running. We do want to be able to give them a break. So again, do reach out to us. Again, just be prepared to jump through some bureaucratic hurdles while we get you up and running. So again, we appreciate your enthusiasm as well as your patience and your work. That's really it from me. I didn't have any KPTZ questions. Yet again, Dr. Locke continues to be the star attraction. So I will take questions from the commissioners.
Questions, Heidi and Greg.
You already answered mine, Lily. Thank you.
I don't have any questions, but kudos on the octopus of support that DEM has been giving to all the vaccine efforts. Good work. I've heard a lot of great things, so thank you.
Lily, one question I'm getting a lot of is when will second doses from our clinics be happening? And have those been scheduled? How will people be contacted, et cetera?
Yeah, so we are guaranteed those second doses. Our first second dose clinic will be on the 17th. For a good number of individuals, we scheduled their second doses at the same time as the first. Otherwise, we will be reaching out to ensure the rest of scheduled. So if you were at one of our clinics and you already got your first dose, again, you are guaranteed that second dose. If you don't already have a second appointment, we will be reaching out to you in the next coming week or so to get that scheduled. So again, you're guaranteed, no worries on your part. We'll be reaching out here relatively soon.
And is that via email primarily?
Yeah, the easiest way is going to be via email, but if we aren't able to you know, contact you that way, we will be making phone calls, but email is the quickest and easiest, so be sure to keep an eye on that for how to schedule that online.
Philip.
Yeah, I have a question for Dr. Locke, and that regards both the jail and homeless facilities. Did I understand you to say, Dr. Locke, in the upcoming phase that the residents themselves will become eligible?
Yes, indeed. And that's as of Wednesday. So we are working on that very actively. We started working on it last week, actually, is logistically how to do that.
Will there be Johnson & Johnson vaccine available for that?
We think that's the preferred one, and we think we can get access to it. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to know more in just the next day or two on that. So, but yeah, for both of those facilities, a one dose vaccine has some, real benefits.
And I wonder if the encampment at the fairgrounds, while not a formal shelter, would also be eligible.
Yeah, good question. I need to research that a bit, but I would say yes. I would say, you know, anything that constitutes a congregate homeless gathering meets the criteria, in my view. And at this stage, we want to, these categories, we want to construe very broadly or very liberally.
Yeah. And are you thinking of actually taking the vaccine to those locations?
We don't have a formal plan to do that yet. But that's why we're trying to develop this volunteer capability. As Willie mentioned, you know, we've been working with the pharmacies for their pop-ups, and that as these things are known, where you know, rather than having a big event where you try to do 300 or 400 people in a day, you just set your sights on with the Moderna vaccine, it's sort of in units of 10. With Johnson & Johnson, it comes in a 5-dose vial, and we always have to use a whole vial at a time. Once you open it up, it's only good for 6 hours.
There's quite a bit of static, Dr. Locke, on your line.
Yeah, I don't know where that is coming from.
I'm just letting you know. I think we can get the gist of what you're saying. It's just really loud.
Yeah, I'm sorry for that. Let me hold the mic away. Does this improve it at all?
It's quiet. Hard to hear you.
Okay.
Were you finished, Dr.
Yes.
Locke?
Yes.
Great. Philip, you're muted, but were you finished as well? Okay. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Locke and Willie. Appreciate all your hard work and you joining us here today. We will see you next Monday. We need to take a short recess before we come back in 5 minutes. So we will be back at 10:40. Thanks, everyone.
This is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org. Thank you for listening and for supporting your local community radio station. To make a donation to KPTZ, please visit kptz.org.
And we've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. A recording of today's reports will be available later today for streaming online at kptz.org.